Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And right now discussing the Tennessee Titans. We got a loaded show for you here today. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville drops by at 7:30. We'll get into the latest with the Tennessee Vols and basketball with him. Another tough loss for the Vols over the weekend against the Kentucky Wildcats. We'll discuss that with Josh. Corey Curtis at 8 o'clock from News 2, as he does every week, will join us. And then at 9 o'clock, Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donick and Chase, also handles the Predators pre- and post-game duties as well for the Nashville Predators radio networks. All that still to come here on the show today. But, Joe, with that in mind, getting back into the Tennessee Titans, let's introduce our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. And today's question is this. If both of these future Hall of Famers are available on the open market this offseason, who would you rather add to the Titans pass rush? Would it be J.J. Watt, who we've discussed a lot here on the show, or would it be Von Miller? 147 votes are in. Right now, 53% say J.J. Watt, 47% say Von Miller. Joe, what do you think of that? Pretty close in the voting so far. Which way would you lean, J.J. Watt or Von Miller?
Well, if you tell me both of these guys will be, like, basically you'll get full season of production and their most recent, you know, production, then I'm going to go Von Miller. I mean, Von Miller, to me, is still a guy who can have massive production. Now, remind me on Von Miller. I don't know exactly where things are with his off-the-field situation, but I know that that's a –
Yeah, I think it's just currently under investigation still. So I don't know exactly what a resolution on that looks like in the immediate future.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's obviously something to take into account, and that's a factor here for everybody, the Broncos and everybody else. But, I mean, all things being equal, and you feel good, you know, that you're going to have him and you're not bringing a problem onto your franchise, I'm going to go with Von Miller. I know at some point you're going to – call me a J.J. Watt hater like I'm a Brady hater. I'm not, but I'm just looking at the reality of him and his injuries, you know, and his age and all that. I think Von Miller probably still has some better football ahead of him than J.J. Watt does.
And it was a pretty funny tweet yesterday from J.J. Watt talking about free agency. Somebody asked him on Twitter, you want to sign somewhere or no? And J.J. Watt quote tweeted it and said, I scroll through DoorDash for like an hour before I pick a restaurant, man. You're going to have to give me a second to choose a new team and a new city. So I don't know if I would expect a decision imminently for J.J. Watt.
Yeah, enjoy the courting. Maybe someone will, maybe Sean Payton will come cook you a meal.
Sure, it would be a great meal.
Yeah, ask your old teammate.
So with that in mind, as you look at the Titans and their priorities this offseason, we've talked a lot about the pass rush. So if you're a Titans fan out there, or Joe Rexroad, I'll ask you as well, if you had to identify your top target for the Titans, whether that's in the draft, whether it's in free agency, any way you want to take it, what would be your top target if you're the Titans when it comes to addressing the pass rush? Because some people's answer to that question has been J.J. Watt. I don't know that that's the route that I would go, but if you're John Robinson, who are you targeting at the top of your list?
So look, I've been saying, I wrote about this, I don't know, was it last week, the week before, you know, I put Matthew Judon as my, you know, as my top target. And you're talking about someone who, you know, is probably going to command some serious money. If you go that route, you know, then that's it probably, right? But I will say that I'm also open to the idea of, you know, trying to get, you have to have depth, you know, and I think this includes drafting someone. And other than that, I'm counting Harold Landry as an edge player on this team and then nobody else. And fine, some of these other guys may be down the depth chart, but they have to be down the depth chart. Like, you've got to totally revamp that position. So if we're talking about the people who you're probably going to get big money, like Bud Dupree, like Yannick Ngakoue, I would pick Matthew Judon of them. I also would say, like, if there's any way to sign two players, I mean, I think that that's really worth exploring. So what are you talking about? I mean, like, how much is Trey Hendrickson going to command? How much is Carl Lawson going to command? TD has mentioned Aquara from the Lions, you know, who's kind of like a little bit more of a discount player. If you can get away with like 15 to 17 million for two guys, is that the better way to go? I mean, I don't know. I'm just saying I'm leaning more toward that if you can find the right guys. Alden Smith, you know, I don't know. I mean, you got to make choices. You got to have two people who are going to come in and make a difference. But if you can get 12 to 14 sacks between two people and have depth and maybe let Harold Landry, like, go get a sip of Gatorade every once in a while in a game and then draft someone and all of a sudden have a totally different-looking group, I like that idea.
Well, I like that idea, too. And, look, my top target is a guy that I'm pretty sure is probably not going to be available, and that is Shaq Barrett. I mean, I talked about that after the Super Bowl. He's a guy that if he did get to free agency, if I'm the Titans, I am highly interested in Shaq Barrett. Now, whether it's via the franchise tag or signing him to a new deal, I've got a tough time, based on what we just saw him do in the playoffs, of seeing Tampa Bay allowing him to get to free agency and not being a part of the fold next year. But if he was, that would be the top target to me in free agency. After that, like, it's interesting. We've talked about Judon. I would still be very cautious if I'm the Titans on Bud Dupree. Like, he played really well. How much of that is being opposite TJ Watt? And now that he's had the ACL injury, like, how does that affect him moving forward as well? Like, I think there's going to be some buyer beware on Bud Dupree. Now, maybe that also drops his price down a little bit and you're able to get him to a better deal than you otherwise would have. But he's a guy to me that I wouldn't be surprised if Bud Dupree signed somewhere and then next year finishes with like four sacks. Like, that would not surprise me at all.
Yep, me either. I'm big buyer beware on him. What about, so here's a guy who, and I think this totally fits the bill of Porth, what you've complained about that they've done in the past, but like a guy like Hassan Reddick.
Yeah.
Kind of a Cam Wake-ish, now Cam Wake way more, you know, success, you know, during his prime, but, you know, kind of the downside, but a guy who could be a pretty decent three for you. You know, you combine him and an Aquara. I mean, you know, somebody like that, you could probably afford both of them versus going to get one of these bigger guys.
I mean, I think, honestly, Leonard Floyd might fit into that bill too.
Yeah.
Maybe more of the Vic Beasley mode than Cam Wake, but Leonard Floyd hasn't been consistent at all throughout his career. And you mentioned Trey Hendrickson. I mean, he had a big year in a contract year, but before this past year, he wasn't all that much. So how much of that is just a big year in a contract year? Then he, you know, still can't stay healthy beyond getting a contract. I mean, the free agency class isn't, outside of Shaq Barrett, there are some pretty big red flags, even with the bigger names out there. And that, if you're John Robinson, you're going to have to really, you know, do your part in picking out which one of these guys is going to come in and make an impact.
Yeah, it's tough. And not exactly in the pass rush front. I've written this, and I believe it. I think that Titans should be looking at Ndamukong Suh.
Yeah.
Because I think you can get him at a discount rate at this point. They were absolutely in on him when he signed with the Rams a couple years ago. And I know he's getting up there, but man, he's still pretty. So he played 788 snaps. He had 50 pressures. Still a player who's pretty good. He's 34 years old, but I mean, that's a guy you put next to Simmons, and I think you got something there at a not necessarily high price.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ron texts in and says, Von Miller and Kawan Short. That would maybe be a great couple of pickups, but not cheap when Von Miller is involved.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree. Like with Kawan Short, yeah, you're probably, yeah, you're talking, I don't know, $5-6 million, something like that.
Yeah.
You know, but Von Miller, you're talking a lot more than that. So that's the thing. If you go even more than like J.J. Watt, who is going to be overpaid. Sorry, J.J. I'm not a J.J. hater, I swear. Sorry to Jared's J.J.
Jared's
I don't hate him. But a guy like, I mean, he's not going to make what Von Miller is going to get, right? Von Miller is going to get, I mean, that's a guy who could get you 12 to 15 on his own right now still.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens from him from a legal perspective and the investigation going on right now. But if he's right and he's on the field and healthy, Von Miller's still a guy that could get it done at a pretty high level. So I'm going to be very fascinated to see what the Broncos do on that front with him. I think his cap hit next year would be like right around $18 million. So, I mean, that's a big number. But also, if you're getting, you know, typical production out of Von Miller, probably worth every bit of the $18 million. So we'll see what the Broncos decide to do on that front. We'll continue this discussion on the other side. What would be your number one target if you're the Titans when it comes to the pass rush? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. 1025 The Game is kicking off every weekend with free beer. And who doesn't love free beer? Make sure you're tuning in all day on Friday for your chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee, talking Titans and discussing the pass rush. Who would be your number one target if you were the Titans when it comes to addressing the pass rush this offseason? Let us know on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Chris, a.k.a. Titans in Truth, texts in, says, the number one target for him is Matt Judon, but if that doesn't work, you would go with a combination of Carl Lawson and Trey Hendrickson. Hendrickson wasn't playing snaps consistently until last year and took advantage of it. Also down for Von Miller as well. That coming from Titans and Truth on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Yeah, you know, the thing about Lawson is, Lawson's one of those, you know, quote-unquote, like, underrated guys, right? Like, he's under-the-radar guys. But the thing is, when everyone starts talking about a guy as under-the-radar, I don't know how under-the-radar he is.
Yeah.
He's one of those guys that you can project as having more production, whereas, like, a guy like Von Miller, you know, his last full season, he had 8 sacks. And before that, Von Miller was, I mean, Von Miller has never had less than 10 sacks in a full season, okay? But, you know, you could see how Von Miller at his age might start going down. Carl Lawson's a guy you can, and sometimes those guys who project up still get paid like not that much less than a Matthew Judon. I mean, that's where it's hard. I mean, the idea of Lawson and Hendrickson both, yeah. I mean, that's intriguing, but that may also be like $24 million. I mean, you know, it's hard to know exactly what the market's going to be. I think Lawson, in particular, is actually going to be really pursued by quite a few teams, and then that just raises the price.
Let's go back to the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coy in Clarksville text in, draft pass rush on all 7 rounds. So Coy's saying, screw it. So the rest of the draft, you draft every single round with a pass rush.
Sure.
He makes sure you get it
so
right.
You got
somebody hits.
So Landry and 7 rookies, and just see how it goes. Just, you know, don't worry about covering anybody. Don't worry about catching any passes after Corey Davis signs with the Washington football team.
I'm here to tell you, if they did that, the pass rush would not be as bad as it was last year. I'm comfortable saying that.
Are you?
Yeah.
7 rookies?
19 sacks.
Well, right, but 7 rookies. Rookies don't usually do that much. So now you got a bunch of, like, you got a 5th-round rookie, you got a 7th-round rookie. Yeah. I don't know, man.
One name that had been discussed a lot in the last couple of years but has maybe flown under more of a radar than typical going into his free agency is Yannick Ngakoue.
Yeah.
What do y'all think about him as an option here?
Yeah, well, I think, yeah, I like Judon better, but Ngakoue is like, I do wonder, like, why does everybody quickly try to trade him, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, yeah, you can go. Oh, you can go. Minnesota's like, you know what? Go ahead. Here, Baltimore. I don't know. But I think he's a good player. You know, I compare him to the guy on his team. I think Judon's better than him. But he's an option, and I think there's at least a lot of options out there, which obviously you talk about supply and demand, at least there are a lot of guys, so it's not like everybody's focusing on the same 3 guys. And I think with Baltimore, there's no way Baltimore is going to keep Ngakoue and Judon. There's no way.
Right.
And they may end up saying goodbye to both of them. But
especially not if they're signing Corey Davis like some people think they are, too. Like, the salary cap eventually has to take place for Baltimore.
Yeah. Well, you've got – who was it? I think Pro Football Focus had Corey Davis signing for, like, 4 years, like $70 million or something like that with Washington. Washington.
Yeah.
Wow. If that's the case, wave goodbye, Titans. And that's the thing. It may happen. All it takes is one team willing to do that, but that just seems high to me. Quite high.
It seems high to me, too. Like, Ngakoue, he's an interesting guy. I mean, 8 sacks last year. So, obviously, like, you'll take 8 sacks if you're the Titans from pretty much anybody at this point. My question is, like, what is the dollar amount going to look like for Ngakoue? Because, you know, he's a guy, would you be comfortable getting into the 15, 16, $7 million, $17 million a year range? That's a whole lot of money.
And the difference between Ngakoue and Judon to me, which I understand we're talking about pass rush, 19 sacks, change that. But Ngakoue is, he's like a DPR, you know, like he's like Judon is a all around good football player who has good, you know, advanced stats against the run. Ngakoue does not at all. Ngakoue is a pass rusher purely. Now,
right.
If he's a pass rusher who gets you 10 sacks, great. But if you're going to pay a lot of money for one of those two guys, I'd rather take the guy who you can play on every down and feel good about it.
When it comes to the draft, the more I read about it, the more that I watch some tape and the experts talk about it, you know, I've already predicted in Call Your Shot Friday that Gregory Rousseau ends up being the pick for the Titans. I really like Azeez Ojulari. I think he's really good. I think he's, if he's there and the Titans are able to get him, I think he's got a chance to be a really good player in the NFL.
I do, too. We have a beat writer, though I'm not our Titans beat writer. We don't have a Titans beat writer. We have a beat writer mock draft this week, and I may be thinking along the same lines as you.
Okay.
But, you know, so much of it is, and we went through this with this exercise, you know, obviously, pick by pick. No trades allowed during this one, but so much of it is just obviously who does someone covet him higher? I mean, Kwity Paye, for example, went super high in this particular draft, and there's a case to be made for him if you look at his measurables and everything like that. Ojulari is he's not big. He's like 240, so he's also a guy who has dropped in that defense. And like with Landry, who I think does a nice job when he's asked to drop and things like that, a versatile all-around player, I think he'd be a player kind of like Landry, which maybe that doesn't sound amazing. I mean, I think he had 8 sacks last year. I don't know that he's going to be some monster sack guy, but if you have another Landry on your team, that's not bad, you know, an all-around good player who can give you some pass rush. I mean, look, at 22 in the first round, you're not getting – the absolute slam dunk home run guy, and really that guy, who is that guy this year? I don't know that there is one anyway, but he may still be there for them. There's also obviously Rousseau. There's Phillips from Miami who had a great year with them, with Rousseau opting out this year. There's at least, again, with the draft, just like free agency, at least there are a lot of options. You just have to make the right choice, and then what do you have a chance to draft at 22?
I've said this before with Rousseau. Like, he's a guy that, you love what you saw a couple of years ago, and the numbers look great, and he was really effective rushing the passer. If I'm the Titans, I mean, he had 15 and a half sacks that year, but he did, that's 1 year. The year before, I mean, he barely played. He got 1 year of production, and then you opt out this past year. Like, if I'm the Titans, you like a lot of the tools physically, and maybe he comes in and is a great player in the NFL, but just having only the 1 year of production would at least make me nervous if I'm John Robinson and the Titans. And I'm sure they would not be alone in that thought.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard because in college football, a lot of times it takes people a couple years. You know, a lot of guys need a redshirt year, and then maybe they're a backup. And so a lot of times you'll see that. Then they blow up in year three, and they're okay, I'm gone. You know, I'm going to the NFL. But that there is the Kevin Dodd example there, too, with a guy who had 1 year – and, like, really, like, one huge game, and obviously what they thought he was not. So that's always – that's something I'm sure that's in their minds over there when they're looking at pass rushers. I mean, obviously they have not made good choices there, whether in free agency or draft. I mean, Landry has been fine. Landry's second-round pick, maybe not exactly you want more sacks, but he's been a good pick. Other than that, you know, they've struggled to pick the right guys.
Let's go to our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Drew texts in and says, Christian Barmore? Question mark. Leave it to Drew to text in with an Alabama guy.
Christian Barmore. Yeah. Good player.
Man. I don't know that he's going to be taken at 22.
Well, no. I'm trying to think.
So you can address it later.
Yeah, I don't know. He may be a first-round pick, right?
Maybe. He's kind of projected towards
end. But we were talking, you know, with him, we're talking about, you know, you're talking about, again, now you're getting into more of a D lineman.
Right.
Which, again, I'm not opposed to that either. I mean, I think that's the thing is, like, you've got to address the edge multiple times, and I think you have to address the interior at least one time in some capacity. This is where, you know, you could look at J.J. Watt and say, you can kind of address him both with a guy like that. But, yeah, I'm not. Christian Barmore, a guy like that, I could make the case for that, depending on what you do in free agency.
Let's quickly go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coy texts in and says, what about trading for Calais Campbell from Baltimore?
All the Ravens. Which Raven would you like?
Campbell, Judon, Ngakoue?
So many Ravens. Yeah, I mean, I get, you know, I like Calais Campbell. He's a good player. What are you trading for him?
And what would the Ravens give him up for? Probably a better question.
Yeah. I mean, I at this point, like, I can't even.
Especially the Titans.
Yeah.
Well, Ravens right. Going to be overly willing to trade with the Titans. Like, yeah, I'll stay over there.
Yeah, they'd certainly would want a lot. And maybe even a little harder line with the Titans. I mean, yeah, it sounds great. I can't wrap my head around trades right now. Or, you know, between free agency and draft, it's already like, you know, I can't deal with trades. So, no.
So, no.
not
too. When we come back, we'll switch gears, dive back into the Tennessee Volunteers. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us. That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. And it was another tough loss for the Tennessee Volunteers over the weekend, this time at the hands of the Kentucky Wildcats. And to help us talk more about that, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. Josh, what's going on, man? How are we doing?
Hey, doing well. Good morning.
So, Josh, obviously another disappointing performance for the Vols on Saturday. They fall at the hands of Kentucky, and it's been pretty amazing to watch just the inconsistency with this group, particularly on offense. What did you think of the game on Saturday for Tennessee against Kentucky, and how concerning at this point is the inconsistency that they've shown pretty regularly as of late to this point?
Yeah, I think the frustrating thing is that a couple of weeks ago we were talking about how the most consistent thing about Tennessee is the inconsistency, and that has continued on the last couple of weeks, and it showed up again on Saturday with Tennessee at home against a Kentucky team that the Vols had just shown. They were better than 2 weeks ago, in my opinion, up there at Kentucky. I know that's not a strong opinion. Look at the records and look at the season of those two teams. But head-to-head, look at the way that game went in the second half. When Tennessee turned it on, it was a much better team than Kentucky. But Tennessee never turned it on at any point on Saturday against Kentucky, which was not very good in the second half, and still was able to control the game throughout the final 20 minutes of the game. And I know that Josiah Jordan James didn't play, and he is important, and I don't think Tennessee loses by 15 with him. But I think the bigger concern is that there are just too many stretches where it seems that the energy is not there, that they don't have an identity of what they need to do, whether Josiah is playing or not, or whether they have Jaden Springer or not. They've had different injury issues, but the same problems continue to be there, and they're trying to figure out where they are offensively. And to your last part of the question there, how concerning? Well, you have a couple weeks to go, and then it's postseason time. And on Friday's show on Sports 180, in Knoxville, we talked to Associate Head Coach Mike Schwartz, and he said, right now is when you need to be putting it together. And we're still talking about what Tennessee has needed to put together for the last several weeks, last couple of months now.
So if there's one guy on this team, Josh, who you would fix, so to speak, if you said if this guy finds his best game consistently the rest of the way, it will make the biggest difference. Who would that be?
I think I would probably go back to John Fulkerson, because I believe if you have John Fulkerson doing that, playing at his best or close to it on a regular basis, takes pressure off the freshman. I think overall, I think we'll see Jaden Springer bounce back. That would be my guess. I don't have as much confidence that that happens with Fulkerson, because it's been a more extended conversation with him. Take out the South Carolina game, and South Carolina, one of the easier opponents to go up against in the league, and we're back to having the same chat with him that we have for so long. So I think I would go with Fulkerson, a guy that last year did turn it on at this time of the year, and it didn't mean much for team success, and meaning where the team was going, but look at what he did against Kentucky last year. Look at what he was doing down the stretch to become an all-SEC level player, and it just hasn't been there in conference play. So I would go with Fulkerson, and from there believe that James, Springer, Johnson, Vescovi here and there, that they will be able to figure out enough for you offensively.
So, Josh, to that point, what do you think is going on with Fulkerson right now? Is it just purely confidence at this point? Because he just doesn't look like the same guy, not anywhere near as aggressive as he was last season. What do you think is going on with him right now so far this year?
I don't know. I don't know if there's more to the story than what we know with what we see on the court and what we hear after games. But the South Carolina game, where he looked really good and look like maybe it could be a bounce-back opportunity, that doesn't appear to be the case. At least we look at Saturday, and we can't say that again. I don't think the Tennessee staff has done a great job of helping him either make plays, create plays within the offense. He's not Trent Williams throwing the basketball, and then the offense is going to run through him. I don't think it works that way. And I think there have been too many frustrating possessions, and it goes to the overall theme of the offense, but we're focusing on the ball, and maybe he's able to score, but he's unlikely to in an isolated situation, and it hasn't worked out. So the idea of play inside out, Fulkerson and Pons, it works great on paper maybe, but I don't know that those are the guys that are going to do that for you. So I think they need to do a better job of figuring out ways to create scoring opportunities for Fulkerson, because we know that he can do it, but I don't know that he's been in the best position to, and it seems like on the court he's still trying to figure it out, while other players are trying to figure out what they're trying to do and maybe how to get him going as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just feel like he opts for the fadeaway jumper over anything else at this point, which I don't totally understand why. But to your point, I feel like it looks to me like Rick Barnes and his staff have kind of gone away from going to him, right? I mean, so it's sort of like chicken and egg on that. Like, did he finally force their hand on that, or have they gone to it too early? I don't know, but I would agree. Like, if you could get some level of reliable post play out of him, it would make a big difference. In the meantime, there's so many bigs on this team, but none of them. Obviously, Plavsic, you know, is a non-factor. I thought Anisicki was good early, but he's faded. What about Kamwa? I mean, I feel like maybe he's a guy who could get more minutes. I kind of like what I'm seeing. At least he gives them a little bit of physicality in there that they're lacking. What do you think about him moving forward?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you're looking for a positive as the season has gone along, I think Olivia Kamwa has become more confident on the floor. I think the coaches have they've always believed in his ability. I think they believe in more of how he's responded as the season has gone along. And part of that is because Anisicki has not responded. He had a couple of games here in the last couple of weeks where I think they were doing what he did out there on the floor, but I was wrong there. I thought EJ Anisicki would come in and make a pretty significant impact with his ability to rebound and do a number of different things, be where he needed to be on the floor to help a little bit offensively, while he would not be a go-to scorer for Tennessee. It just hasn't played out that way. So the post presence has not been what Tennessee has needed, and if you're going to look for an area to criticize in recruiting, it would come back to post play. They just haven't recruited at a really high level there, and that's partly why we're having this conversation. There was, there was a lot of talk and excitement even with Lewis Plavsic coming to Tennessee, but he just hasn't provided much on the floor. Same with Drew Pember, who was a local prospect. There just hasn't been anything there. So they need more. Coy Walker was a guy that maybe they thought could come in, but was slowed at the start because of injury, and just hasn't. he has not been a factor this year. He's just a true freshman, but a forward that maybe could have provided a little length and athleticism, and it just hasn't been there. So part of it's development, part of it's the overall personnel conversation. And, you know, I think maybe that's part of what's affecting what they can do offensively. You know, back to Fulkerson, he is the guy that you're pointing to. So, okay, he's your post presence that can score, but not in the right situations. I mean, he to me is a guy that would be better if you could pick and roll with him, pick and pop. But you know, the development of the outside shot has not been there like I kind of anticipated this season as well. So we're sitting here a week before the start of March, still asking the same questions about how to get somebody going in that position or position group.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And Josh, I realize they shot very poorly on Saturday against Kentucky, but based on what you've seen as of late in the whole picture from Keon Johnson and Jaden Springer, are those the best two options right now for Tennessee offensively? Should that be where Rick Barnes and this Tennessee team try to run their offense through, is those two freshmen?
Yeah, I think the upside is still very obvious, and we've seen what they were able to do. They needed that last Kentucky performance this past Saturday, and it just wasn't there, and now we see the result. And other guys are going to be able to score. There are going to be some games where Santiago Viscovi is hitting, and I think Victor Bailey Jr., his performance last week against South Carolina and what he was able to do during part of the game against Kentucky on Saturday, that can create some optimism. And while it shouldn't be an excuse for that kind of performance, King's side, Jordan James back is going to be very important on both ends of the floor, because this team is still going to be driven by defense, and if they can create turnovers, takeaways, and get out in transition, that will help fix some of this offensive conversation that we're having. The numbers show, and I think the pleasure for a lot of teams, especially Tennessee, if they can create something on defense, it helps them offensively. Josiah will do that. But to your question, just go down the roster. Who gives you the most confidence that they can score game in, game out? It's probably going to be the freshman. But that's why I said I would fix John Fulkerson if I could, because the idea of you're going to rely on two young guys who are still kind of learning along the way, and we just saw on Saturday that the floor can still be pretty low. They need help too.
So I look at this team too, Josh, and I think about, I mean, the college basketball is really tricky these days. You know, you got the transfer market is so big. Like, I watched Michigan yesterday. They got two transfers who are just huge. They would have been an average team, and they got these two transfer guards, and they're like a Final Four team. And I look at Tennessee, they're probably going to lose Johnson and Springer, I would think. I think Johnson for sure. They're bringing in Kenny Chandler, but then you're losing, I get, you know, well, of course, there's always a chance that a senior comes back like a Fulkerson, I guess. But what do you think about just like where this program is and how, I guess, tricky it is to kind of keep things from year to year and get old and have that right mix to make a run?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a really tricky year because of the possibility of seniors coming back. Like Rick Barnes said that EJ Anasicki plans to come back next year. That could change, or maybe something changes with Fulkerson to where he would want to come back for a sixth year. I imagine Pons goes ahead and leaves and takes his shot at the NBA after this season. But the transfer market is what makes it so difficult to project from year to year, because I would just anticipate that Tennessee will go out and try to find somebody that can come in, at least one player, maybe a couple of players, who can come in and help right away. Kennedy Chandler is going to be a guy that helps lead Tennessee's offense. I feel comfortable going ahead and projecting there. If Josiah Jordan James is back for his third season, he'll play a huge role in what they do. But I agree. I think Johnson and Springer are expected to leave right now, and that will give Kennedy Chandler an opportunity to maybe fix some of what we're talking about as well. We haven't really directly hit on it today, but have previously. They need more point guard help, somebody to create offensively with the ball. I thought that would be better this season than it has been. With Kennedy Chandler, that should be a fix. But the overall makeup of the roster is a big unknown, because there's some other guys that could opt to leave, maybe be encouraged to leave, and that could create more opportunity to bring somebody else in to try to be an instant fix for the roster.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville has been our guest here on Robbie and Rexro. Josh, great stuff as always, man. Appreciate you taking time to join us.
Hey, you got it. Thanks a lot, guys.
When we come back, we'll react to a little bit of what Josh had to say there and ask the question, is this Tennessee basketball team destined for an early tournament exit? We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Final 8 seconds. Kentucky's defense held Tennessee to 32% shooting. And that's it. comes Kentucky towards the tail end of the season.
Yes, they are.
A 70-55 win over Tennessee.
Not a great day for the Tennessee Vols on Saturday against Kentucky. They fall 70-55 in a game, Joe Rexrode, where they just never shot the ball well at all. Finished 32% from the floor. The freshmen really struggled shooting the ball. Pretty much everybody outside of Victor Bailey struggled shooting the ball for Tennessee on Saturday. And it was one of those games offensively where you look at this team, and it's happened a few times this year, and just wonder, like, if they run into games and stretches where they shoot like that, I mean, they give themselves no chance. As good as they are defensively and as talented as they've proven they can be, they've had way too many games this year where they just completely fall off the table offensively. And because of that, for me anyway, it's very difficult to trust them moving forward to make any sort of deep run. So I ask you the question, as you look at this team and you factor in everything involved, the talent that they have, how good they've been defensively, but also these performances offensively that have happened pretty regularly at this point, is this team destined for an early tournament exit based on how inconsistent they've been?
It's certainly not destined for one. I mean, this team could make a run. You know, last week was, I thought, kind of a glimpse of when they're at their best and their worst. They really, a fast-paced game suits them so much better. And obviously South Carolina, I mean, it's kind of weird. Frank Martin has just decided to, let's just play up and down hoops. It hasn't worked very well for his team, but like when Tennessee gets stops and gets out on the break, Tennessee is lethal. You know, especially you get Keon Johnson going in the open court, Jaden Springer, they've got shooters. I mean, they can be really, really tough. When a team like Kentucky hits every shot they take, like that happened in the first half, yeah, and you have to walk the ball up the floor, and you see their limitations. And especially, you know, if they're not having a hot outside shooting night. And I thought that game Saturday, they looked like they were affected by Kentucky's – I think that they panicked a little bit because Kentucky was hitting every shot in the first half. So you have to play slow, and you're not really handling it well. And that's one of my concerns with this team is leadership. Especially like Fulkerson already is not a vocal guy, but when he's not playing well, what do you really expect him to do? Eve Pons, heck of a player, heck of an athlete, great defensive player. He's not yelling at anybody. I mean, those are quiet guys. So you got to have Josiah James, and he didn't even play Saturday, you know? So there's a lot of things to worry about, but I don't think they're destined for that. I do think, like Josh Ward was talking about, you have to try to get some inside-out stuff going. I don't hate the idea of posting Pons up and getting him in the post more, but he just prefers shooting jump shots. Fulkerson prefers shooting jump shots. You gotta get to the line some way. To me, if it's not going to be through the post, then it's going to be Keon Johnson in particular and Jaden Springer driving people to the basket and being aggressive that way. Because if they get into a game in the tournament where they're just in a slow game like that Ole Miss loss, slow, sludgy game, and you get into where you're just half court, pass the ball around, take a jump shot, that's the kind of game that they could lose to anybody.
And the inconsistency continues to just creep up with this team, and you have a great game against an albeit pretty bad South Carolina team, but you played well offensively and you're feeling good about yourself, and then you come out and have another stinker on Saturday against Kentucky. And Rick Barnes talked about the inconsistency after the game and not being able to handle success. Here's what Tennessee head coach Rick Barnes had to say.
I don't know if I would say they don't handle adversity. I don't think they've handled success very well, Grant. You know, when you feel like we're getting things going and you feel like we're turning the corner, that's why I don't think we've had to. And that shows up more like, you know, when you talk about not seeing practice, I think if you saw practice, you could see some of that. But I will say this too, that goes back to really leadership within the framework of what we're trying to do. And some of that we talk about has got to come from within the players. But I would say that more of the adversity is when I don't think we've handled success very well. I really don't, you know, because it's that old adage, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And I know yesterday we didn't get better in terms of what we need to do with our preparation. And that's frustrating. We talked about it because, you know, I watch practice tape every day, sometimes today, and I made them watch what we did in practice yesterday. And Shutterman, hey, this ain't going to work. And we honestly came out and played the first half, pretty much how we started, how we practiced yesterday.
So that was Rick Barnes after the game on Saturday against Kentucky. So what do you think of what he threw out there of this team not being able to handle success well? And when you hear Rick Barnes talk about, you know, the practice before the Kentucky game and how that's been a theme so far this season of not being able to figure it out when it feels like you're turning the corner, how big of an indictment is that on the leadership with this team right now?
Yeah, it's got to be to some extent, you know. And, of course, you know, you look at the – always look at the millionaire. Always look at the coach. You know, like you got to get your team ready. That said, very few teams win championships or go far if they don't have some of that at the player level, like a lot of that usually at the player level. So I do think that that's something that's a problem for this team. It's weird, too. Like, it's a weird parallel between the two Tennessee teams because the Lady Vols lost to Georgia yesterday, a game that they should have won. I think Renaya Davis got fouled on the three at the end, but they didn't call it.
What were they, 4 of 32?
4 of 32 in the first half. And still had a chance to win the game. But Kelly Harper said the same thing that Rick Barnes said after the game, which is we saw it in practice. Now, they also came off a win over South Carolina. The difference is the women beating South Carolina means you beat the number two team in the country, and it's the biggest win for the program in years. You know, the men, it's not the same. You know, like, you're not like celebrating some massive win over South Carolina. So it's an interesting way to for Barnes to put it. Whether it's handling bad stuff or good stuff, they've just been – and we keep thinking, like, oh, now they figured it out. And then they come out and have a stinker. Obviously, in the NCAA tournament, you can't do that. It's going to be interesting here in Nashville, you know, to see if they can put something together. I mean, like, their depth, which I thought was such a strength early in the year, it's really not there anymore.
Yeah.
Like, they, especially, like, up front. But, you know, they're not using as many players. And so... But their main guys have got to play better. Josiah James is really important. You know, I don't care if he scores 6 points in a game for you. He's a really big part of this team. So hopefully for them, he's not a – like this wrist thing is not a long-term thing. And I tell you what, they need him Wednesday at Vanderbilt, the way Vanderbilt's playing. They need him defensively.
They do. And, you know, we talked about it earlier in the show, but some – you know, Rick Barnes criticism coming on Vol Twitter and talking about how, you know, when the moments are big, and we know about the story around Rick Barnes in the NCAA tournament and not being able to get back to the Final Four and some of the tournament failures that have taken place there. That was kind of all over the place on Saturday on Vol Twitter. And I said it to begin the show, like, I don't think there's a huge number of Tennessee fans that like are calling for Rick Barnes' job, but I do think there are some. And my message to those fans would be, let's have a little dose of reality and see what this Tennessee basketball program has been. You're in conversations right now with Duke and Kansas and Kentucky for some of these highly recruited players across the country, and those are conversations that you have not been in before in the history of your program. Probably just need to take a step back and have a little perspective would be my advice.
No question. I mean, look, and look, it's fair. I mean, Rick Barnes hasn't been in the Final Four since 2003. It's fair to say why – have you not been able to have more success with the teams you've had? But, again, like you said, let's put it in the context of this program. They got the best point guard in the country coming in next year. They've had a lot of good teams. He's won the SEC. You know, you should be happy with your coach. I'm fine with fans freaking out when you have a crappy game like this, but just please don't – please stop bringing up Bruce Pearl. Like, he's not coming back. Bruce Pearl is like Lane Kiffin of basketball, you know? Like, he's not coming back.
That was a heck of a barbecue, I hear.
Yeah, and again, like, well, there's a great thing. It's like the barbecue thing with Bruce Pearl is just like Al Capone and tax evasion, okay? I understand it was just one barbecue, but he also, they lied and let's, sure. Come on. So.
Great barbecue, though.
Yeah, great barbecue. Aaron Kraft. Oh, wow. Just got to have Aaron Kraft. Two teams I want to mention real quick. Belmont is 24-1.
They've won
30 straight. They are the champions of the OVC. So they've, in 9 years of being in it, they've won it 7 times.
It's pretty good.
Pretty amazing. So they continue to soar here and really are, I mean, to me, maybe they have the best profile of having a chance to do, hey, we might have like a 5-12 Tennessee Belmont game, and I am here for it. And I think it's coming down to the wire if that's the case. And Lipscomb, we never talk about Lipscomb. You know, they're 15-10. They got a big win Saturday. Lenny Acuff in his second year, that team has beaten the two teams ahead of them in the standings in the A's Sun, Bellarmine and Liberty, and that team has a chance to be in the NCAA tournament. So keep an eye on the Bisons. Asan Asajula is a really special player for them inside. KJ Johnson, that's a, you know, very under the radar. Belmont is the story of the city in hoops, but Lipscomb is pretty good, so they got a shot here.
Also, Tennessee Vanderbilt coming up this week as well, so a big matchup. I know Tennessee hammered them a couple weeks ago, but this one could be pretty interesting coming up later this week, so we'll have plenty of time to discuss that matchup as well. Another tough loss for Vanderbilt to Alabama over the weekend as well. When we come back, we will switch gears, get back into the Tennessee Titans, discuss what the future looks like for Rashawn Evans as well as some other players on that side of the ball with Corey Curtis from News 2. He'll join us next. This is Robbie and Rexrode live from the Wholesaling Studio powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.